Let's talk about it.
Hello and welcome back to Thick Radio, the podcast where we talk about gaining, feedism, and everything in its orbit. I'm James.
And I'm Tim, so let's get into it.
So today, we were obviously doing a review. You know this how this goes every now and again, we do a little review. And this one's going to be different because this one isn't shit.
I think this might be one of the... So I know you liked Hard Fat and you liked... The third documentary in the Fat trilogy.
Feed.
But I think we hated everything else.
Yeah, everything else being bad. But the thing is, this was really nice. This was really nice.
It's a really cute movie.
Yeah. So listeners, we watched a film called Paternity Leave, which was directed and written by Matt Riddlehoover, who's done a few different bits and pieces. He often does a lot of stuff with his husband, which is quite nice. His husband, Dustin Tittle, and they've worked on other films like What's Wrong with Gerald and My Darling Vivian, which is a film about Johnny Cash's first wife that had Reese Witherspoon as part of the project, you know. So they've actually worked with some big names and such. And also What's Wrong with Gerald stars Jacob York, who was also the main character in this film. So, you know, sort of familiar territory, things they've done in the past, things they're doing now. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the first thing I would want to say is just how wonderfully gay the film was. Well, because, you know, it just was. Most of the characters were gay. Most of the relationships were gay coded, and but actually no, not even gay coded, just gay.
Just gay, yeah.
And it was legitimate. The actors, you know, we did a bit of research. All the different background actors, all the ones that were gay, they're gay. And the writers, of course, two husbands, they're gay. And so the dialogue is very. How long was it into the film before I was like, this feels very legit.
I think we were only 2.5 minutes in and you're like, this film, like the dialogue, like this is how gay couples talk to each other.
Yeah. So look, we're going to get into all that, but listen, we just want to kick things off. This is going to be a good one today. We're happy to report there's some good happening in one of these reviews. So look, kicking things off, we were talking about this. The film is called Paternity Leave, led by Jacob York, who plays a man named Greg. He's 4 years into his first really stable relationship with a man named Ken, played by Charlie David, who, if you don't know, he's been in...
Everything gay ever.
50 million gay things. Holy crap. Google the name, you'll know him from something. And then in the film, they have a conversation about, like, considering adoption, but only after, like, being together for 10 years first. And then almost straight after that, Greg finds out that he is pregnant. Now, Greg is not a trans man in the plot of this film. In fact, there's like a side storyline where for some reason, men are now just able to be pregnant. It's a thing that people are talking about. And I think the inference is that there's like a womb accessible through the butthole that people haven't discovered or something. But anyways, that's basically the plot. He is a cisgendered gay man who becomes and has a successful pregnancy. So, I mean, look, kicking this off, first of all, then, like, you are also a cis gay man.
Yes.
How does that sit with you as a narrative on, like, pregnancy and queerness and bodies as a medical person?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously I know that that's not possible because anatomically a man cannot carry a fetus without a womb. That's just not, I mean, in terms of what medicine has known since time began, that's not possible. I don't know if evolution will fix that. I honestly don't know. I don't, anyway, but aside from the science, like I watching this film, it's just, it's really cute. And I think that a lot of the conversations that they have are the kinds of conversations gay men would have if we were capable of getting pregnant. You know, it felt very real. It felt very grounded. It's a very lovely idea. I just, you know, I wouldn't hold your breath for the day that this is actually possible.
No, of course. And in saying that, we, of course, are not erasing the existence of trans men who...
No, not at all. Like, I mean, if you are a cisgendered man and you intend to stay one, you're not going to get pregnant.
Right, right. So, I mean, I just find it very interesting, you know, like, that they took the approach of, I don't know, it's the kind of thing I'm curious about. Like, they took the approach of creating a fantasy world in which cisgendered men can become pregnant, but in reality, trans men can become pregnant, and there's not necessarily conversation about that, you know? And I don't know, maybe part of the intention of accessing a specifically fantastical world where this is possible is a key element to the plot, to kind of draw out narratives around relationships and child rearing in an environment that is undeniably surprising, rather than, oh, he's a trans man, narratives on expectations that because they have a vagina that they might already know about things, or that the transness becomes the center of the conversation, and perhaps they wanted to make it more specifically about the journey of pregnancy and their relationship. I'm not too sure. I did a bit of a Google. I couldn't find anything that kind of highlighted that. But,
you know, I should also add to that, I don't know how biology works with people who are born intersex. I don't know anything about it. So maybe it is. I don't know. That's the thing, is I don't know. Like, I've never been taught that, so I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, and I think also the language around those types of things can, you know, I think trip people up sometimes. Like, is it chromosomally intersex, biologically intersex, male, female, you know, that type of thing, right? Like, I can imagine that that's a contention for some people. But I would say, if there is anyone listening who is a trans person who feels comfortable having a conversation on narratives around sex and pregnancy with transness, we'd love to hear from you to get some more insight and information that maybe might help other people to be a bit more open to however that process works for y'all. So if you do, reach out to us at thethickradio@gmail.com. But as we were saying, it's a very, very sweet film. Now, kind of following along chronologically, the first part of the film, there's this flashback to his previous relationship with a man called Alex, and Greg's not pregnant at this time, but Alex makes a lot of allusions to Greg's weight, both direct and indirect, and also in Italian. Like, he's on the phone to somebody when Greg's like doing his hair or something, and he's just like on the phone, and you see the subtitles flash up, like, he's gotten so fat it's insane.
Which, you know, that actor at the time, like, you know, if we're just supposed to see the actor as that character in that body in that moment, he had like a tiny bit of love handles on the side. That was it.
Yeah. But do you feel like the way, because we talked a bit about how, like, the script, I do think, was very authentic. Do you feel like that is how, like, gay couples tend to talk about weight?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Like, this, the backhanded compliment or the snide side compliment or comment about, you know, oh, are you sure you want to eat that? Or do you really need ice cream right now? Or maybe let's go for a jog, or, you know, shit like that. Yeah. You know how many times I got told that by Jamie?
Which boggles my mind, you know. I don't know. It's one of those things I do reflect on, because I've been, for so much of my life now, like, specifically in relationships with people who either are plus size or have been plus size or neutral with regards to the gaining journey, but I've never been in a relationship where that has been a part of the common narrative, right? That kind of back and forth. So you feel that that's a genuine reflection of how gay couples...
I think it's a genuine reflection of how some gay men handle themselves in a relationship. Not all. I don't think it's the rule. But yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've even seen partners of friends do that to my, you know, to them. It's like, I don't think that it's indicative of every single gay relationship, but I do think that it's indicative of how some gay men handle themselves in a relationship. Like I said with my ex-husband Jamie, like he would do that to me. And I've seen like friends of mine, I've seen their partners do that to them. You know, and it's toxic and stupid and just let it go. But you know, it's this constant obsession that I don't want to say the entire queer community at this point, because I am noticing a shift, but there is a contingent within the queer community, specifically cisgendered gay men, who are obsessed with body image.
You know, it's funny, you and I were talking about a podcast recently that I won't name here, about a TV show that you and I both really quite enjoy, and it's co-hosted by these three men. And I found it really fascinating because obviously, one of the episodes, it's about a TV show, one of the episodes they cover is centric to the concept of fat. And I was expecting that conversation and remarks in that episode. But I've listened to quite a few now, and there is a lot of referencing to body image issues that they have and feeling fat and, you know, thinking things about food and food culture and things like that. And it just kind of took me aback a bit because, in fairness, I don't really listen to non-fat people in podcasts, if I'll be honest. So it just kind of surprised me that I was like, there's no real reason to bring this up, and yet this is the flavor of the day, every day. So I think you are right. I think, you know, there is certainly something for people that they like to kind of grab a hold of, both literally and metaphorically. And I don't know, that's just really interesting to me. And kind of bringing it back to Jacob York, the actor, I think he has a wonderfully nondescript body, by which I mean, Hollywood and gay men especially have this thing of needing to have like huge tits, six-pack abs, defined legs and shoulders and bum. And this man was so beautifully average in his body, like had the teeniest peak of stomach and love handle and softness to him, you know, someone who just doesn't hit the gym and is clearly just doing whatever in life. And I want to ask you, do you feel like that's representation in this film?
I think so, because the average gay man does not look like a supermodel. The average gay, like some of the other actors that were in the film, like the guy who plays the doula, we don't look like that. Not most of us. I mean, yeah, there are plenty of us that, you know, strive to achieve that look, but there are plenty of us that don't. So it's nice to see someone who just looks like a regular human being, you know, who happens to be gay, and he's not some underwear model or some, you know, fitness guru that we're all, you know, that we're all supposed to lust after. I would totally go after this guy.
Yeah, you know, there was something about just the cute dialogue, the cute little pooch, the body that I was just like, oh, this is genuinely a man I would ask out, right? And I think it is worth kind of commenting here, like when you think about everything else where people are just kind of built to look so beautiful on screen. If you saw that person in your day-to-day life, like you probably wouldn't even try to talk to them because you'd look at them and think, well, you're going to be a cunt. So I think there is something to be said about representing with, you know, and I don't mean to say nondescript or to imply that this person is ugly or even average looking.
No.
Beautiful. He just
Yeah.
doesn't look like the Hollywood typical that everyone else is subscribing to.
Yeah. And I would say that when it comes to guys that are like ridiculously attractive, like again, the guy who played the doula, it's not that I wouldn't talk to him because I think he's going to have a shitty attitude. It's more that insecurity of like, well, he's not going to be interested in me. Guys that look like that never go after guys that look like me. So what would the point be? You know, like I it's just that kind of defeatist thing where I like psych myself out before I even start a conversation, because I'm like, there's no way on earth this guy is ever going to be interested in me.
Yeah. Now, there was something I found interesting. This only happened at the start, but so he's got a half sister, Connie, who she seems a little bit erratic, a little bit of a mess, and she has children and a pet chicken.
I did think that was weird. I've never understood what the point of the chicken was.
I mean, my assumption is that it is referencing the idiom of being clucky, You know, like, oh, I want a baby. I'm feeling clucky. I'm feeling like the mother hen who wants to sit on the eggs and, you know, using the warmth of my body, bring life into the world. So I wonder, and ex I, well, I say I wonder, I expect that that was the motif because we only ever hear and see the chicken prior to the announcement of his pregnancy. Like, you either see it in the background of shots or like they're just talking, and in the very faintest background, you hear, you know, like, okay.
I think you hear it in the background while they're having sex too.
Yeah, so again, it's like magical chicken voodoo magic. That's like cluck cluck, you're pregnant,
It
motherfucker.
was the chicken all the it was the chicken all along.
It was a chicken all along. Dun 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 dun. Catherine Hahn is gonna play her in the sequel. Oh my goodness. Now, as the film progresses, and you know, we know he's gonna be pregnant. He doesn't know he's pregnant at this stage. He's experiencing morning sickness, mood swings, his feet are swelling, and his appetite's increasing. We know that obviously all of this signifies a pregnancy. The way in which it kind of all manifests, do you feel like that makes sense to pregnancy? The way he kind of goes about his
Yeah,
day?
I mean, it's all stereotypical. It's probably all things that, I mean, these are two gay men who wrote the script, so they probably were just interviewing their girlfriends that, you know, like what they experienced during their pregnancies. He ticks off all the boxes that you would expect. It doesn't really get into the nitty-gritty, like down and dirty of what happens during pregnancy. Like, I don't remember him mentioning hemorrhoids or anything. But you know, it just follows all the typical beats. Same thing as an M-Preg fiction would do.
Yeah, and I suppose that this, and if this needed explaining, this is obviously why we watched the film and have reviewed the film. Because speaking to people we know who enjoy the M-Preg fetish, this film kind of registers as the iconic M-Preg fantasy, because obviously there are TV show episodes and role plays and whatnot that go on.
Well, and you have that horrendous Arnold Schwarzenegger film, Junior, which I would recommend this over Junior.
But you know, like, this is a feature-length film. This is 90 minutes, and you know, it's quite nice comparative. Like, I know we said this before, it's a nicer film, but it's quite nice in comparison to even a lot of other romance films, because you genuinely have this like back and forth of a relationship finding its feet again with the announcement of the pregnancy and rediscovering themselves and making changes to their lives. And there is an element in which he questions himself, like, I am a gay man. Like, what am I doing being pregnant? What the fuck is that about? Like, half the point of being gay is I never have to worry about fucking my partner in the butt or bottoming and getting pregnant. Like, you know, he asks some really good questions about, I guess, reframing how we see queerness in a world in which pregnancy is mostly kept from us. Like, yes, there are options. Yes, there are potentials, again, as far as trans and intersex people are concerned. But for the most part, queer relationships, like, unless you adopt, kids ain't happening. So it is interesting to see the kind of unpacking of that aspect of it all, I think.
I can appreciate a lot of what Greg was saying during like the middle bit of the film when he had just realized that he was pregnant and all the things that that meant and his feelings on the subject, you know. And it's like I've known many women in my lifetime and they all have children at this point, and I've heard the same things come out of their mouths, you know. So I appreciate that it. A man probably would experience the same kind of emotions that a woman would, you know, and think the same things and have the same fears and insecurities. And yeah, sometimes they talk about what men go through during pregnancy and all their emotions and, you know, concerns and whatnot, but I don't think that that's ever examined because men en masse really don't want to be involved in spilling of their emotions, talking about their vulnerabilities, or dealing with the reality of their wife being pregnant.
You know, that just brings the thought to mind as well. Obviously, I'm looking at this through a queer lens as a queer person. It's a very clearly queer film. But maleness in general, Like, there is a sort of cutaway scene where you find out that, like, this is happening to other men as well. And they're flicking through the channels. And there is a doctor, like, doing the whole, this makes one rethink the purpose of men in a relationship. Like, you know, a bit of an aside, but that's a genuine point, right? Like, what is a man when a man can get pregnant? Like, oftentimes, and again, not to discredit trans people here and the trans experience, but oftentimes, especially among the gender critical people, this is often touted as like the big argument. A woman is meant to get pregnant and a man is not. And it really does kind of unplug a lot of what we expect to happen, even though we know the beats of pregnancy and what we can expect. I found myself watching the film not really knowing what was going to happen next
Yeah.
because it was so different to how I expect the gender to play out, you know? Now, as an aside here, what was your thoughts on the pregnancy belly?
In the earlier months, it looked more convincing. At the 9 month mark, it didn't look very convincing, but that's just because men are like women obviously are shaped differently, so the pregnancy looks different than it would on it. Like he just looked like he was overweight at that point, you know, the way that they put a big sweater on him, and like you could almost see towards the bottom where there was a clear like overlap, like in a pregnancy that wouldn't really happen, you know, because
It's a all one kind of consistent thing.
you know what I'm saying.
And I suppose that's another point, right? Like, obviously, for the sake of the film and to present the pregnancy, they needed a belly slash fat suit to make that happen. They're not going to find one for men, because that doesn't exist in the most typical of ways. So, you know, I think I agree. Like, the early months, especially, the belly looked far more convincing. The character had quite a bushy beard, you know, so like you can be forgiven for like if the face wasn't like the most fullest because the beard kind of made up for it. So I did think that was good. And I will say there were a couple of moments where, like, with the belly, he was shown to be proceeding to have sex. And I had an instant boner. I was like, oh my God. Like, I never get to see a man with a belly getting the fuck. So I was like, oh, this is.
Not even in the porn you watch.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, in the sake of a film, right? Like,
Oh,
how many
okay.
films with a typical sex scene, they never involve fat people, let alone fat
Not.
men, let alone gay men. So, you know, that for me was very. Chef's kiss, very, very much appreciated. Though I will say, at one point when his belly's looking very big, Greg and Ken begin to have sex, but Greg says, oh, stop, 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 I can feel the baby moving. And then his partner Ken gets very uncomfortable and exits the room. Is that a reflection of things, again, is that a reflection of things that you know of that happen in pregnant relationships?
I mean, not that any of my girlfriends have reported to me that ever happening, but I'm sure that it does happen, you know, like because once the baby starts moving, I bet that makes everything that much more real, you know, like, oh, it's not just, you're not just fat. This isn't indigestion or a blockage or something. This is a human moving around inside someone else's body. And I can see that freaking men out. I really can. And I don't know how many men are freaked out about it and just don't say anything, you know? So I don't know if it's typical, but I could certainly see it being common.
Yeah, it's funny, I found myself aligning with Greg, and I don't necessarily think it's because he was just the main character, but I certainly found myself aligning with Greg, like when he was joyous about his pregnancy, I felt happy. When he was stressed and anxious about his pregnancy, I felt down. And so when Ken, you know, stops pursuing sex and leaves the room, I felt rejected in that moment. I was like, oh, you know? And it wasn't like I thought of my own belly in that moment, but I do think it's quite interesting that, like, the ways in which we connect with different characters and the different things they experience, you know?
Well, and I know that this is kind of a flimsy comparison, but sometimes I think about some of the big boys that I've been with that were not gainers, and they were not all of them, but a couple of them were very like wanted me to have sex with them, but to avoid the belly completely, almost as if they weren't overweight, you know, to sort of pretend that they weren't. And if I drew any attention to the areas that they didn't want me to, like me, I'm a person who's going to get right in your belly and start worshiping it. They got uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like I said, flimsy comparison, but that's kind of where my mind went.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think we've spoken about this in the past. You know, there's this essence of gainers needing to be reminded, or at least reminding ourselves, not everyone who's fat is happy to be fat, and not everyone who has size wants to grow, you know? And I do think this is a little bit reflective of that, because as we saw, of course, in the film, there was a lot of self-deprecating humor from Greg about his weight, about his size. When he meets the doula suggests he write in a diary, and he's like, I want you to write this diary. I'm a fat piece of shit today. I'm an ugly, disgusting he-beast. And I don't know, I was like, I don't know if this is therapy, but it's just kind of coming across like, yeah, you are fat, and you do look bad, and you should journal about it to process.
Like, well, I kind of think that maybe, yeah, like you said, to process it. I think that was the point of the journaling, was because that's a typical thing in psychological exercises where they, you know, like, write anything. If you're feeling like you are a worthless piece of shit, right? You're a worthless piece of shit. Just work it out, get it down, so it's not swimming around in your head, you know, making your life more difficult and stressing you out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, anyone out there who's a psych who wants to write in and advise on that situation, please reach out to us at thethickradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. I mentioned before that this film to me reads very unique, also in the fact that it was gay dominant, and also you see that Greg has multiple queer interactions with people, some sexual and some non-sexual. So there's his partner Ken, there's his ex Alex at the time, but also in the future when he bumps into him, and that relationship is different again. There's his best friend, his best friend's partner, one of the doctors that he goes to see who eventually declares that he is pregnant. Even, well, the doula, of course, even the, like, TV presenter that interviews him, you know? And I just thought to myself, like, that's so interesting. That's so many different relationships, sexual, platonic, business, close and intimate, and then also distant. You know, I don't think we see that very often. And I want to ask you, how did that sit with you to see so much gay connectivity being shown?
I loved it because that's how a lot of us live our lives. You know, most gay men have a social circle that is also comprised of gay men or lesbians, trans people. Like it's usually a diverse group. And I like that there is a look at each of those relationships individually, you know, and that it's not like, cause I've seen this before. I've seen it in Queer as Folk. I've seen it in The L Word. I've seen it in Trick. I've seen it in 2-1 Food, but I like that this isn't focusing on sex so much. This is just genuine relationships that you have with other people in your life, you know?
Yeah. I will say there's an element to which didn't necessarily sit with me. So his best friend, what was it, Craig? It was Eddie. His best friend, yeah. Eddie, apparently has a stroke. And then they talk about him being in like a wheelchair and having like the mind of a 3-year-old. And we never see him again, but we see...
No, there's no resolution to that storyline.
That was the only part that really kind of stuck out to me in, like, a weird way. I'm sort of thinking, like, what is the purpose of this? Why are we not seeing this? Like, part of me was thinking, like, did they write that into the script because they were going to have that actor more and that actor wasn't available? But then I was like, just write him out of the story. Like, you don't need to talk about him. It's... Anyways... That was a random thing. If anyone else has watched this film and has some insider knowledge, please let us know in the usual places. But by the time we get to the end of the film, it's time for the birth. And he's opted for a water birth at home. His partner's there. The doula's there. You know, the female doctor from earlier in the film, his half-sister, and they're all... I actually found it to be an incredibly... sweet scene.
It was.
He is, you know, mostly nude, except for a thin shirt that he's got on, and he's wet and sweaty and screaming at the top of his lungs. But everyone around him is actually championing him. And again, it was just like a regular pregnancy. And I wonder if that's why I found it to be a sweet scene, because it felt like, if possible, what gay birth would be like. Just an assortment of weird, wacky, wonderful queer individuals coming together and celebrating life, you
I
know?
assume it would be. I mean, there's no reason that it would be any different for us.
Yeah. So look, that's mostly the plot of the film, you know, and I will say here as well, the pacing leaves something to be desired. It is a 90-minute film. There is a part of me that does feel like they could cut that down to a quick 45 minutes, personally speaking. There are
Yeah,
certain
there were a lot of lingering shots that were unnecessary.
conversations that, you know, again, like there's a scene where he's talking to his friend's partner after his partner's had a stroke, and they're just kind of talking about him, and it doesn't feel like it goes anywhere. Like there are just a couple of crunchy crunch moments that to me make it a not a perfect 10. But you know, that's basically the film. It is a gay couple, one gets pregnant, he has a baby, and it just covers their lives from start to finish. So I want to ask you here, what do you feel like the director's motivations were when it came to this film? Because remember, he both wrote and directed the film.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that it was to show that if this situation was happening between two gay men, it wouldn't be any different than if it was between a cisgendered heterosexual man and woman.
Yeah, something that sits with me because the film came out in 2015. And the opening shot of the film is them watching TV talking about the legalization of gay marriage. And then in the closing scenes of the film, they mention how six Republican stalwarts have become pregnant. And so now they're making paternity leave mandatory, and it's going to be signed off by the president next week, it's expected. So I feel like that kind of comes back to the adage of if a man could get pregnant, you'd have free abortion clinics on every fucking corner, and you could get them with your shopping and everything. But I wonder, the state of gay marriage in 2015, if the premise of paternity leave was to kind of present a very romantic and very homely film presenting queerness to potentially straight audiences to kind of illustrate, hey, gay
And
marriage
we're
is.
no different than you. We're no different than you. We go through the same damn thing. We have the same conversations. We have the same struggles. If kids are in the mix, we consider the same things like buying different cars, moving homes. It's the same thing.
Yeah, there was a conversation point about needing to upgrade one of their cars, about needing to childproof the home. You know, again, like conversations that didn't drive the plot forward in any meaningful way, but conversations that I think are genuinely reflective of like the quiet moments, you know, the little things that happen in between. And I think that's one of the best parts about the film, personally. And I want to ask you, what was your favorite part of the film?
Overall, it's just a really cute movie. I really like all the actors that were in it. I really appreciate the realness of the dialogue between the two characters playing the couple. I also really appreciate that when the doula comes along, because he's played by this, ridiculously good-looking
Oh,
actor,
gorgeous. Fuck. And oh my God, singer.
Oh yeah, and can sing.
There's a random scene where they've got a Casio and he's like singing a song to the pregnant man, and it's very on the nose, but anyways, continue.
But I appreciate the fact that they didn't try to shoe in like an affair kind of situation because the
Yes.
doula was so good looking, Because typically, there's a lot of gay films that will do that. Like the hot character who comes in the middle of the film drives a wedge between the two established characters. I'm glad that this character functioned solely as a doula. It was like, that's my purpose. That's what I'm here for. I'm not here for anything else. I'm here to help you through this pregnancy. So I appreciated that. And I really love the scene where Charlie David's character is flipping through the TV and he comes to the news report about how men are getting pregnant like across the country and whatnot. And Greg comes in and he asks him, like, what are you watching? Oh, sorry, what was
His character name is
Charlie?
Ken.
Ken. Okay, so he and then Ken goes, well, last night in a West Hollywood bar, a gay man gave birth in a toilet.
and the gay man is like, I didn't even know that was in there.
I didn't know that was in there.
You know, again, that's very gay. That feels very authentic. If men could get pregnant, gay men would be shitting out babies in coke clouds in gay bathrooms and nightclubs at 2 in the morning. It would be bedlam. All right. So I would say definitely my favorite things about the film was the authenticity, the fact that they managed to create a world that seemed so real in its dialogue, in its actions, in the way it all goes down. I felt it was very authentic. In terms of things I disliked, again, for me, the only major critique is the pacing. Yeah. I will also reference the friend storyline where he had a stroke and that kind of went nowhere. Like, that's a bit of a whatever.
We really needed a resolution of that.
Yeah, needed a resolution. But for the most part, it was just pacing. You know, I think that film could have been made into a tight 45. I think certain scenes could have been either cut out entirely or condensed down or shortened a bit, you know.
Sound design also left something to be desired. It wasn't like the sound quality was not good.
Yeah, from a filmic standpoint, it was very clear that, you know, they filmed on a decent enough camera, but they also recorded sound on that camera. There was no separate sound recording. The mix was really poor in certain locations, a lot of echo, a lot of tinny kind of background sound effects. And again, the chicken comes to mind, because I think it was, like, is this a chicken or is this traffic? I don't know what I'm listening to. But, you know, this isn't Fat Girls and Feeders, you know. This isn't
no not at all
harassing, up the nostrils, greasy, awful music making people look like psychopaths. This was actually quite—
this is a very well done, tasteful film.
Yeah. What would you change about the film?
I don't know if I— well, I mean, I would give a resolution to the care to the best friend that had a stroke storyline, or leave it out completely. Like, I don't— like you said, I don't know why it was added in if we don't get to see what happens later on, you know, if they're only going to talk about him off camera. I would change that. But beyond that, you know, there's really nothing with the pacing, but it's a pretty solid film.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see a ton that needs to be changed. Overall, I just enjoy it.
I agree. I think my only plot change would just be to get rid of the random stroke side story. Or actually, what I would do is make it so that it turns out the friend is also pregnant at the same time, and maybe they miscarriage, and actually explore a little bit of that storyline as well. You know, exploring that experience of women who are pregnant and are friends, and then one friend experiences tragedy and how one processes tragedy. Like, I think that would have been a much nicer arc in the film to kind of balance with the positivity and things like that. But
yeah,
I hope that's a minor thing. Otherwise, for me, it's the basic production stuff. It's improving on the sound, trimming down that script. But I think I'm ready to give a review here, and I'm gonna let you go first. Tim, what do you score this film out of 10?
I give it an 8.
Yeah.
I don't think it's perfect, but I give it a solid 8.
Yeah, I would give it an 8 too. I think so much about this film was genuinely really enjoyable, really, really good. It's just those couple of key things I'd tidy up, you know? But there you go.
I think it's the second highest scoring film that we've watched thus far, unless we gave a bigger score to the third documentary in that trilogy, because I know we both liked it, but I don't remember if I gave it a 10.
We may have done. Let's double check here. So listeners, as a quick recap, for Hard Fat, Tim scored it a 10. I actually scored Hard Fat an 8. I don't think I understood at the time just how desperate these scores would score. I think I thought I was being real clever, being like, I'm going to give it an 8. I'm sure there'll be some 9s and 10s coming along that we've yet to encounter. but you scored it a 10. I scored it an 8. you know, when we watched the Queer as Folk episode Move and Leave, I think we scored that a 7 each. That scored quite highly. Feed Me, you gave it a 6, I gave it a 7. So yeah, this would actually be, in terms of films, our second highest grossing film. So there you go, everyone. That's an 8 out of 10 for both of us, which makes it an obvious 8 out of 10 average. But that's it for the episode. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Please remember to like and subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and leave us a good review. If you liked this episode, the podcast, or just us in general, share it with your friends and encourage them to tune in. You can find me on Instagram and Beefy Frat at Stanham.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, and Beefy Frat at Thicky Mouse. You can also look us up on Instagram and TikTok at Thick Radio or at our website at www.podpage.com/thickradio. If you want to submit a voice note, you can reach us at anchor.fm/thickradio/message. And if you have any questions or ideas for episodes, you can reach us at thethickradio@gmail.com. So until next time, bye, fats.
Bye, fats.
Let's talk about it.
Thick Radio is a Patreon and Anchor app podcast produced by Stan and Dickie Mouse.
Mixed and mastered by Stan.
Our artwork is provided by Lokitu.
Our theme song is provided by Bonfire Cream.